Hey everybody, I'm Ed Wyckoff, and I am an alcoholic. And by the grace of God and the fellowship of the program, I've been sober since April 20th, 1996. And it's been a miracle. My first time around the program, well, let me start a little earlier. My life, I had a good young life. You know, I had a good family. My dad was a pilot. My mom was a nurse. We were a middle class family. No big drama, nothing. Really a good family life. And but even growing up, you know, I didn't feel a part of it like the rest of them seemed to, you know. I got five sisters and them and the family. We'd all do things together, but I just never really felt a part of. And really don't know why. But, you know, that's just the way it was. I graduated from high school in 1970, had an appointment to the United States Air Force Academy, and I went there, and they told us we were America's finest, and we believed it. And then I started drinking, and I proved them all wrong. You know, I started going downhill pretty quick. The first time I really drank, other than a couple of beers in high school, which I didn't enjoy, didn't like, didn't get drunk, I don't know if I ever finished a beer. So I was kind of a late bloomer compared to a lot of people that come in here. But the first time I drank there, we had a squadron party. They asked what they wanted. Hell, I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't drink. I told them, get me a bottle of Seagram 7, and I pretty much drank that whole fifth that night. And from then on, my drinking was the same way. Every time I drank, I got drunk, and I got as drunk as I could get. And that's how my life went on. I didn't finish the academy. I resigned, got out. Eventually got married and just continued drinking, working menial jobs, doing those things that we do, you know, and surviving. And at this time, my drinking wasn't getting me in a lot of trouble, you know, or anything like that, but I drank a lot. You know, that was just the way it was. Eventually got divorced. And I'm going to rush through this pretty quick because really my drinking story ain't no different than anybody else's. Eventually got divorced. Went into the bartending business, and things really got fun, you know. I had a bartending job. I worked 3 days a week. And, of course, at the time, it was in a real nice bar, made lots of money, had enough I could party the other 4 days a week, and that's what I did for a lot of years. And then things started getting worse. I started getting in more trouble, and I developed a pattern. And my pattern was this. I would drink, and I'd go to jail. And then I would sober up. And then I'd get out of jail for a few days, and I might control my drinking for a little while, and then I'd get back at it, and I'd go back to jail. Never anything big, never anything real serious, you know, drunk driving, public drunk, theft, dealing a little bit, you know, this and that, but no big heavy-duty stuff, you know. And but that was my pattern for a lot of years, you know, drink, go to jail, sober up, drink, go to jail. And that was okay for me for a long time. Then somehow I met another woman that would put up with me. And we got married. And, of course, my drinking's continually getting worse and worse and worse. And eventually I wound up in here the first time. It was in the mid to early 80s. She was after me to quit drinking so much or to cut back. Her mom had been in Al-Anon for a lot of years because her dad had a little drinking problem. So she got me to come up here. And I bounced in and out of here for several years and didn't do anything and didn't stay sober. And finally got locked up on a pretty serious charge and was going to spend a little time in jail. And I sobered up for a little while. And I came back in the program and I got here. And I stayed sober for almost 7 years. And there was only one problem with that 7 years I was here. I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't work any steps. I really didn't get any relationship with a God. All I did was not drink and come to meetings. So the bottom line is what I did is I didn't drink and I got sicker and sicker and sicker every day I was in here. And did that for a while. And of course, I was still in the restaurant business. I wasn't tending bar anymore, but you know, and I was managing not to drink. I was fortunate enough. I worked in an establishment where there were several people there who were also in the program. So that kind of helped to keep me sober. But I didn't, you know, I just wasn't doing well. That was the bottom line. I was really angry, sick, that's tired, real asshole to put up with, not somebody pleasant to be around. The kind of guy I was with this, I was a restaurant manager. And if you pissed me off in the restaurant, I wouldn't just fire you. You know, if you did something wrong and I was going to suspend you for a few days, I'd wait till I made sure it was the week so that paycheck would call the first of the month when your rent was due. So you'd really suffer. You know, that's the kind of guy I was. You know, had a dishwasher that had a bad habit of putting dirty pots back up on the shelf, and the health inspector busted us for it one time. So one night after work, I made him take every single pot in that restaurant and scrub it till it was shining. And then when he got done, then I fired him. You know, that's the kind of person I was when I was sober. Now, this is not drinking, just to let y'all know. So I did that for almost 7 years, and then I got out of the restaurant business, and I took a job doing commercial construction, and I was traveling. And, of course, I started traveling. I quit going to meetings. And it wasn't long before I started smoking a little pot. You know, and then, for no reason at all, one night, we used to all get off work, and we'd all go out, and we'd shoot pool. And I was always the designated driver, because everybody knew I didn't drink. We'd load up the van, we'd go to the pool hall. And that one night, the bosses came with us, which they never did. And everybody was taking turns buying rounds of drinks. And it got to be my turn. And I walked up there, and I ordered everybody's drink, and I said, "I'm a double shot of Jack Daniels." And I killed it right there at the bar. And I was off and running for another 3 years. I didn't drink quite as bad as I used to. You know, I was more of a binge drinker at that time. But I still drank and drank and I drank, and I got to, I was just absolutely crazy. And using some other substances also. So my first moment of clarity after all this, I was, I guess I got to tell this story because my wife told it to the guys. And if I don't tell it, they'll be disappointed. I've come back in town. I was working in town at the time. And I'm in the bed sleeping. My wife was managing a flea market at the time, so she got up early to get it open and get it going. And I'm in there sleeping. And next thing I know, she comes in there yelling and screaming and raising hell. And she'd been up doing some laundry while things were getting going and found some dope in my pocket. You know, in my pants pockets. So she freaked out. And she's going off yelling and screaming, and I'm like, you know, I'm just in a daze, so I'm not really responding too well. But just kind of ignoring her, waiting for her to blow off steam and go back outside, which she did. So I went back to bed. So she comes back inside and sees that I've just gone back to bed and blown it off, and she's pissed. Next thing I know, I'm getting beat with a mop. And that's when I had that moment of clarity. Damn it, I have screwed up now, you know. So after a few minutes of that, she went back outside. And then this is where this disease is it's a disease of perception. So she went back outside, and I get it. I'm thinking, who in the hell does she think she is? You know, I work hard. I support the family. I take good care of them. If I want to do a little dope every now and then, by God, I'll do it. So she came back inside, and then we really got into it. And I'm going off, and I'm all, you know, justified in my addiction, and everything I'm doing is okay. And for the first time ever, I put my hand on that woman, and I pushed her down the stairs and out of the house. You know, and that scared the shit out of me, because I had never done anything like that before to her. So I did what any good alcoholic would do. I grabbed some guns and things that I could take to the pawn shop because she had all the money in the checking account that I couldn't get to. And went to the pawn shop, went and got a hotel room. And I went to the hotel room that night with a gun, a bag of dope, and a bottle of liquor. And didn't really know which one I was going to use first. Just could not make up my mind. And I might have had a drink or two. I don't remember. I didn't use the gun or the dope. I flushed all that. And the next night I came up here and I picked up a white chip on a Sunday evening. And I didn't really want to come back up here and pick up a white chip because, you know, this place, there's just too many damn people here and I know them all and they know me. But I came on Sunday night because back then Sunday night meetings, the original Howl Group, was really not a very big meeting. I thought, well, I'll do it. I'm going to do it tonight if I'm going to do it. So I came up here. Turned out it was somebody's birthday, and there was just about as many damn people in the room as there are right now. But I did it anyway. You know, I did it anyway. And so I started over. And during all this going in and out and going out, I learned a very good thing about me, you know. I started getting to the steps eventually with a sponsor. And we got on that first step and we started about being powerless over alcohol and my life being unmanageable. And it made it real easy to look back on my life and figure out where my life was unmanageable. You know, that it was, that, I mean, yeah, I had a problem with alcohol, but my life was really screwed up. I didn't know how to do anything without drinking, you know. I tell the story in here, and I know a lot of people here have heard it, you know. My pattern was I went to jail, got out, got drunk, went to jail, got out, got drunk. And I found something out real quick. I was fine in jail. You put me in jail, and after the first day or so getting over the shakes from no alcohol, I'm good. You know, I get up in the morning, I eat breakfast. I go back to my cell, I straighten up, I watch TV, I eat lunch. I go back to my cell, I take a nap, I get up, I eat dinner. I sit around, I watch TV, and I go to bed. I can do that for long periods of time with no problem. Doesn't bother me a bit. But then y'all put me back out on the street, and I got a wife, and a family, and a job, and bills, and responsibilities, and all that crap. I don't know how to deal with it. So I go, and first thing I do is I go get me a drink of liquor so I can calm down, and I can start trying to do some of the things I'm supposed to do. I didn't do them very good. But at least I could kind of face them and do a little bit. So I came back in the program, and I don't know, I probably had a week sober. And quite frankly, I'd made up my mind I couldn't do this again. This was not going to work for me. It might work for all of y'all. And there were a lot of people still here that had been new when I went out. When I came back, they were still here. It might work for all of y'all, but I couldn't do it. It wasn't going to work for me. And I just about made up my mind to go back to that job out of town, and I was going to drink and just stay out of town and work, and whatever happened, happened. And a good buddy of mine that I'd known since before I went back out, I mentioned his name, Joe Duck, convinced me, bought me a ticket to the Marietta Roundup, and convinced me to go, promised him I'd go. I'd hang around long, because I was telling him, I don't know if I can do this, Joe. I just don't know. So I'll hang around, go to the Roundup, see how you feel afterwards. And I did. And I got to the Roundup, and I'm not going to mention all these names because some of them are around, but somebody grabbed hold of me, and him and his wife kept them with me all weekend, took me out to lunch the day on Saturday between meetings and stuff. Pretty much just kept, and I don't know if they did it intentionally or just being friendly, but if they knew what kind of shape I was in, but they kept me there with them pretty much the whole weekend. Another gentleman had a room down there at the hotel for the Roundup, but he wasn't going to use it because he lived here local. But they got him the room because he was on the committee. He gave me his hotel room, so I just stayed there all weekend. And when I got through that weekend, I still wasn't sure if I was going to make it, you know. But I did kind of feel like I was a part of again. Those people that made me feel like I belonged and maybe I had a chance. So I did that and I came back. And I'm not drinking and going to meetings still. I hadn't got a sponsor yet, but you know, I'd only been back a few weeks. And I did that for maybe 2 months. And I just got downright suicidal. You know, that was the bottom line. I couldn't do it, you know. I'm trying not to drink, but I'm not doing anything about it. And I rode around basically all day long in my truck at work, in between jobs, thinking about pulling in an alley in downtown Atlanta and blowing my brains out. And I'd never done that before. You know, I'd never been suicidal. So I come up here one evening, and I walked in, and Mike Cook was here, and he looked at me and said, "Boy, what is wrong with you?" And I broke down and I told him. And he told me the smartest thing I've heard, the most intelligent thing I've ever heard in this meeting. He says, "Boy, when you get home tonight, take that gun out of your truck and put it in the house." And I did that, and I didn't think about shooting myself anymore. And I'm thinking, this man is brilliant, you know? I mean, how could he figure that out, that if you don't ride around with a loaded gun in a truck, you won't be tempted to use it? This never occurred to me, you know? But so he did, and he also told me, "Boy, we're going to work together for a while." and he became my sponsor. And we went through the steps. And we got to step two. And he knew where I stood with God and how I felt about it. It wasn't that I didn't believe in God. I just didn't know what God had to do with me not drinking liquor. You know, I couldn't understand that. And he had his own problems with God when he came in. So he was able to help me that, and he took me to the second step, and he showed me that line where it says, you know, I only have to answer one simple question. Do I now believe, or am I willing to believe in a power greater than myself? And I could say, well, hell yeah, there's got to be something bigger than me, because I'm, you know, lower than whale shit. So that's just all there is to that. And so we started going through the steps, and we got to step three. And it has that phrase in there that's the only line in the big book that I've ever disagreed with, I think, where it says, we thought long and hard before taking this step, making sure we were ready. Because if I had done that, I still wouldn't have taken this step. Because I wasn't ready. I wasn't going to be ready. He told me, it's time to do that step. And we got down on our knees, and we did the third step, just like it's in the book. And I got up off my knees. I didn't feel any different than I did when I got down there. But I had done it. And I said, what now? And he said, now we keep working. So we kept working. And then, of course, like every good sponsee, I balked on the fourth step. You know, he'd see me and say, how you doing on that fourth step? And he gave me all the paperwork and everything to do. And I was looking to get it out and look at it and stare at it and maybe write a name or two and lay it back down and then not even look at it again for a while. And I probably drug that out for, I don't, maybe 3 to 4 months at the most. I really don't know. I came up here one night and he said, Ed, how's it going that fourth step? I said, oh, I'm working on it. I said, well, you ought to be pretty close by now. I said, oh yeah. He said, good. Be at my house Friday at 5 o'clock. We're going to do your fifth step. So I went to work. This was like Tuesday. So I went to work and I got it done and we got through it. And I did my fourth and fifth step and I didn't get any of that big relief they talk about in there either, you know. I felt better. Let me put it that way. I'm not saying I didn't get any relief because I realized that I wasn't unique anymore. I was like everybody else that was in here. I had the same feelings. I'd been through the same stuff. I sought the same things and done the same things that everybody else had done. And, you know, then it was okay to move on. So we kept working. For me, I don't know about everybody else, my first really conscious contact with God came in the ninth step, just like it says in the book. We suddenly realized that God was doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. My son tried to commit suicide, you know, and he's up in Tennessee and I'm down here and my ex-wife and I aren't exactly on speaking terms, so I can't get any information. I don't know what's going on. I'm ready just to tear off up there and go raise hell and find out what the hell's happening. And I didn't do that. I sat down and I said a prayer. And I drove over to my sponsor's house. And I talked to him. And I came up here to a meeting. And back then we had a little non-smoking meeting back over here in the corner. And I went to that non-smoking meeting because it wasn't so big. And I shared about it in there and I did what I was supposed to do. And then I got home and I got a good night's sleep. And I got up in the morning and I prayed again. And I went up there to take care of my son. And I'd like to say I handled it perfectly. It didn't. I still cussed his mom out when I got there. But everything else I did well. You know, I got through that. And I looked back on it and I realized that not once in that whole thing had I really been angry. I had not thought about a drink. I wasn't thinking about poor me. I was worried about my son and my daughter and my family. You know, I'd actually become a human being almost again. And that was just an amazing thing to me. And since then, it's just grown. You know, it's just grown. I've been through a lot of stuff in the program, you know. But all of it, I've had God next to me. I don't know what's happened to me tonight, because I'm probably going to run out of things to say long before this meeting's over. Usually I can talk forever once I get started. But there are some things I want to talk about, too. I've been through some tough things in this program. My son, I still worry about him. He's back out there using, has been for a long time, but he's maintaining and he's doing okay. Our relationship's not what I wish it could be. Some of that's my fault, some of it's his, you know. I could probably try harder to be in touch with him. And maybe he could let me in a little more if he wanted to, but I just keep trying. That's all I know how to do. Got another daughter that struggled real bad with addiction. She's doing okay right now. Not like I'd like her to be. She's not really in recovery, but she's managing to stay relatively clean. You know, she's on a methadone program, but she's managing to not do anything else. And she's doing real good for herself at this time. She's working. She's living with us. She's not stealing from me. That's a miracle. You know, because that's been going on for years. So, you know, that part, that's going okay. I've had the deaths in the family. You know, about, I guess it's been 5 years now. I don't know if I can keep up. I had a 2-month-old granddaughter die. And I learned something real serious about this program at that time. Why y'all are all here for me. That was a tough time. You know, you just want to shut down. You don't know how to react. But I came in here, and what I found out is I can come in here, and all the stuff I'm feeling inside, I can be angry at God, I can sit here and I can cuss God, I can rant and rave and yell and scream and feel sorry for myself. And then from all of y'all, I get the strength to go back home with grace and dignity and take care of what my family needs done for them. And that was another big moment in my life. I didn't know if I should share this or not, but I'm going to. I'm going through another one right now. About a month ago, I got diagnosed with cancer. And I got stomach cancer, and it spread to my liver and some of my lymph nodes. And the prognosis is, we don't know. We just have to wait and see how I respond to treatment. You know, if I tried to pin him down, he said maybe 2 or 3 years. But he also said it could be a lot longer than that. We don't know. We just have to see. And I found the same thing in here now that I found then. You know, I can be scared, and I got people up here I can talk to. I can have those moments when my faith lapses, and I don't know what I'm going to do. But I come up here, and I got people I can talk to. And I got people that are praying for me and taking care of me and helping me. And so far, everything's gone good. You know, I went through my first round of chemo this week, and I've done great. You know, I hadn't felt too bad at all. And I'm proud of that. And I'm not saying this for any pity or selfish reasons or anything else. But I want y'all to know how this thing works in my life. You know, I know God's got my back. You know, and whatever happens with this in the future, I'll be okay with it. I can go through it with a relative amount of grace and dignity and a little bit of cussing and kicking and screaming and fear on the side, and I'll be okay, you know, and my family will be okay, and we'll get through it all as best we can. One reason I wanted to share that is this, you know, we hear the fear and faith thing in here all the time, and that's always been a big thing for me. It just burns me up when I hear somebody say, you know, if you got fear, you don't have faith. And if you have faith, you don't have fear, because from my experience, that's total bullshit. If I never had any fear, I wouldn't need that faith. You know, I'd be fine. I could just walk through life. It'd be a picnic, you know. It'd just be a piece of cake all the time. But I get those fears, you know. I get them when there's not big things going on. I get them with little everyday things. Hell, it's little everyday things to eat my lunch. Big stuff I usually handle pretty good. But I get those fears. When I get those fears, I use my faith and I go to God and He gets me through it. You know, He brings me out of it. I heard a speaker say one time, or it might even be in a big book somewhere, all men of faith have courage. You know, and courage is walking through something even though you're afraid of it. So if I don't have any fear, then I don't need that faith, you know. And that's what's gotten me through to this point in my life. It really has. And got me where I need to be. And this ain't never happened to me before, but I'm running out of things to talk about. I know I do, and I'll give me a second. I will start talking about it again, because there were some things that were on my mind. I want to talk a little bit, just a minute here, about the quality of my sobriety, not just the length of it. You know, I've been sober a pretty good while, and like a lot of people, I found myself getting into a rut for a long time. I travel when I work, and I worked a lot, you know, and I go out and I'd work. And then I come home, and I go to a meeting here and there out of town, but I come home and I catch a couple of meetings on the weekends here. and then spend the rest of the time with my family, and then I go back out and work. And that's all I did, you know, work, spend a little time with the family, work, spend a little time with the family. And the quality of my sobriety kind of suffered. I was not living life like I should be living it. And, of course, I've been around these guys for a long time. Known some of them since they came in the program. Been friends with them since they came in and got sober. So I started hanging around with these bunch of ugly guys in the best out here. And it's really made a big difference in my sobriety. You know, it gave me something to do to get outside of myself, to get with some other people, to celebrate recovery, to participate in recovery. Something I really hadn't been doing for a long time. You know, all I had been doing was doing my thing. You know, not really doing any service work, not working with anybody, not doing much of anything. Going to meetings, staying sober, you know, working. And they have made a big difference in my life because they really brought me out of myself and into doing stuff for some other people. And then there's this one down here. She didn't quite tell the whole story. I'm going to. We had met because something had happened up here, and her sponsor wanted an opinion. And why they came to me, I have no idea. Because I don't know if they've got that one. So we had met and talked a little bit. And her sponsor fired her. And I don't know if she minds me telling this or not, but I'm going to tell it any damn way. Her sponsor fired her. And, you know, it wasn't anything I don't think she had done. It was just one of those things. So she called me. And I talked to her, and I told her, you need to find you another sponsor right away. You need to get you another woman sponsor now. And she said, women are all bitches. I don't want one. And I know she didn't want me to tell that story. But, so I told her, you need to find a sponsor, but I will help you temporarily until you find one. Now, I don't think she ever looked, quite frankly. But it has worked out, and she's done me a lot of good. You know, it really does. Jeff can tell you. She called me up, something going on in her life. I'd be at work, been working 18 hours a day. I'm wore slap out. You know, she'd call up. We get on the phone. We start talking program. I come back to work. Dave said, man, did you go out and take a nap? Because I just look refreshed. And that's what it does to me, you know, when I get the chance to work with somebody in the program. And I really work it like I'm supposed to do it and like I should do it more often. But so it's been a good thing for me. I'm going to run out on you, I'm afraid. But I don't know. I don't really know what else to say. You know, I've got a real good life right now. I have had for a long time. I got a good wife. She's stuck with me for damn near 30 years. Who knows why? Most of my kids are doing okay. I got 13 grandkids that love me to death. A great grandkid on the way, which I'm too old for that. Probably shouldn't tell this story. I'm going to tell it anyway. Somebody in the program asked me one time when my first granddaughter was going to be born because I was in my 40s then. Did that make me feel old? And I told him, no, it makes me think my daughter's a drunk little slut. But I've changed my attitude since then, guys. That was a long time ago. But I just had to throw that out there. She still reminds me of that from time to time. But anyway, I don't know, you know. This program is a good thing, man. Maybe I shouldn't have shared that. But I don't know. But thank you. Thank you. I don't know what else to say, really, you know. I've been helped by so many people in this program. The ones that know it, that consciously reached out and tried to help me. You know, hell, I remember I used to go have to sit with Dana. I was five, six years sober. I would spend all day, almost every day, sitting with Danny to keep me sane. And that is a God honest truth. That's a God honest truth because I was going through some tough times. I'm going bankrupt. Things aren't going good in my life. I was really nuts. And I'd go and sit with that man for hours just talking to keep me from going off the rails. You know, I really would. And there have been so many over the years that have been like that. You know, people I can come to and talk to and will help me, you know, at the drop of a hat. And now I've got them now. You know, I got them coming out of the woodwork. My phone's filled up with messages every day from people sending me prayers and best wishes and whatever, which is, you know, all I could ask for out of this life. You know, to see those things coming to me, somebody who definitely didn't deserve it, you know, it's all the grace of God. It's just nothing but a great gift. That's the gift I got from working this program. And I'm going to close this just like I always do. I know I'm probably not the man I'm supposed to be. And I'm not the man I could be. But thank God I'm not the man I used to be. So thank y'all.